The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning.
You can't just look at me and point.
I was ill prepared.
Phil doesn't have his headphones on. Welcome to another episode. I guess that's encouraging
when both of you are pointing at each other.
I know, it's fun, isn't it?
Pointing doesn't work on radio, does it?
No, you. Oh, my goodness. The fun and the frivolity never ends. Oh, yes, it does. It ends for Christmas every year. I love being sick for Christmas. Bob, did you have a fun Christmas?
I did.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you actually get to have Christmas?
Yeah, it was very quiet at home kind of a Christmas, but I needed some recovery time, and it was all in all a great Christmas.
Nice. Well, Bill got gypped again this year.
I got the man the emphysema award.
So I basically wheezed and laid in bed the whole time.
The home care emphysema award.
Yes. Yeah. So
played hospice.
You sound much better than you did when I talked to you last Sunday.
I know. I didn't have a whole voice for a whole week. Very irritating.
So we ended up. Did we? We replayed Debbie Bacciacalupi and J.D. King
last Sunday. Yeah, that was a fun show.
It was.
And plus, it was a good topic because now they're talking about, you know, OR7 and his pack. I've yet to see any kind of count on what kind of pack that is, but that they are, that they're coming over the Oregon border and, you know, efforts, of course, will be stepped up, blah, 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 to, you know, make a home for wolves in California because we can totally live with wolves in California because people and wolves, they go together so well. And cattle, throw them in there and you know, let's not leave out the sheep. They usually fare, you know, pretty well. So anyway, not awesome. Yeah,
But we're going to have a science show today, right?
Yeah. We're going to take a little break from
I brought my Altoids and my liter soda, so I thought we could set something up here and do a little demonstration later.
It's not Altoids. It's Mentos.
Oh, Mentos. Mentos. All right, no demonstration.
Have you ever done that, Bob? Like the experiment, you know, where you drop the Mentos into the quart of soda? And it blows up like a volcano.
Oh, yeah.
It shoots way up in the air.
Lots of fun.
Yeah, we're not doing that today.
We're not doing that. But we did it once before. Made a huge mess in our backyard. It was pretty fun, actually. Nice for everybody. So we have Dr. Enstrom's going to be on the phone here as soon as you call him. But maybe we should, I hate to do this to people, but maybe we should take a really early break, call him, and then we won't interrupt, huh?
Well, I can call him while you're
science interrupting
bantering.
Is.
Elizabeth was in the chat room yesterday on Sovereign Minds, by the way, so she better show up this morning.
We should tell people about the chat room. We're just not on our game. My chat room window isn't opening. I guess maybe that's why I forgot about it. So join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here every Sunday from 8 to 10. I actually know what we're doing next week, but let's see here.
Elizabeth is on the chat room this morning.
Is she?
Yeah,
I can't get on the darn chat room.
Yeah, she's clear in Utah.
So, okay. I was going to tell you about next week because then we'll forget about it. But next week we have Lawrence McQuillan on about the gas tax in California. And Yeah. So I'll just give you the first couple sentences here. The next time you swipe your debit or your credit card at the gas pump, you'll be doing more than filling your tank. You'll also be helping to finance parks, bike paths, pedestrian walkways, overlooks, viewing areas, parking lots, turnouts, stack and pack houses, and government land grabs in the San Francisco Bay Area without enjoying any of the benefits. So just in case you were curious where your gas tax money is going and how that's being used and or abused, depending on your point of view, that is next week, so don't miss it. We're on Sunday mornings from 8 to 10, always. We had a little host change because Elizabeth escaped.
She bailed on us.
She did. She bailed on us and went to...
She was beat down by California.
I know. Another tragedy of California's thriving economy. You should. Your headphones are buttoned into your vest there.
Oh, yeah, the problem.
that's worst places for your headphones to be buttoned into.
Yeah, that's a.
I'm such a rookie.
I was like, I can see what's going to happen when you stand up. So anyway, Elizabeth moved. So now Bill is here. And then I made Bill sick, so, you know, we thought...
How is it that these nurses and doctors don't just, like, catch everything in the hospital that's going around?
I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, so I think next time you get sick, I'm going to go on vacation somewhere far, far away.
Yeah, you probably should, actually.
Well, you would know this, Eric. You used to teach. Teachers catch everything in the school, in the classroom.
I didn't really get sick that much.
Really?
No. But I was kind of a really, I don't know, I was really healthy at that particular point in time. I think it's because I had two kids at home. So they brought home all the germs and I got, you know what I mean? You get
kids will immunize you in your house.
Yeah, get your little immune system going on there, I guess. I don't know. So, anyway, we've got that stuff squared away. If you want to join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, you can pop into the chat room there by clicking the Listen Live button. We have a ton of information online today. Seriously, a ton. And it got bigger last night even. We added some more stuff. Dr. Enstrom has three extra guests for us today. I'll give you a sneak preview on those guys. I won't give you the whole scoop on exactly who each one is, but they're going to be experts in toxicology, statistics, and socioeconomic impacts connected with the CARB diesel regulations. For those of you who have maybe not been focusing on this, CARB is the California Air Resources Board. We have done shows prior on this topic. You can look in the archives, but actually our good friend Warren Duffy likes to call them the California Arbitrary Rules for Bankruptcy. And that actually is getting closer and closer. It starts January 1. All right. Bob, swift break.
Dr. Enstrom is standing by.
Okay. Let's do swift break, and then we'll come right back, and it'll be all Dr. Enstrom. And then second hour, we'll have the other three guys on there, and we're going to talk about CARB. If you want to call us, you're going to have to do it early. It's 530-605-4567. You're listening to We the People Radio. Aaron, Bill, Bob.
On AM 14. Oh, go ahead.
I was going there.
We'll be back.
We'll be back. AM 1460. I'm watching Bob push buttons here. And
here we go.
Oh, there we go. We got it. We had to cue the music, right?
Three times, yes.
Yeah, I was like, okay, nothing's happening when you're pushing that button. Are we going to have to sing the song? That's going to be bad.
I can sing the song. Want me to start singing?
Unbutton your vest.
But good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them? We've got to put you down. We call it a town. Give power to the people. Power to the people.
Exactly. It's time we got some power back to the people. I think people are itching for
Amen,
that.
Amen, sister.
take off your little flower power outfit. Hey,
peace and love, baby.
Exactly. I think it's supposed to be peace, love, out. I think that's what they say.
Groovy.
We are obviously very cool here.
We didn't say out in the 60s.
Oh, okay. I was like... born in the 60s, so I don't really know what you were all doing. I did live 50 miles from Woodstock, though, but I didn't find out it happened until I was in college. Not good. Hey, so we are going to start right in here with Dr. James Enstrom, and I am going to really direct people to the webpage. This is going to be pivotal today because there is a ton of information. One of the, if you don't pay attention to anything else on the page, Dr. Enstrom worked up a fact sheet with, what do we have, five facts? Two, three, four, five facts and an action item for people. There are some things about CARB that I think most folks didn't know involving the American Cancer Society. And we're always looking on the show for, you know, I mean, we do topics, you know, fiscal responsibility, following the Constitution, you know, limited government, that sort of thing. But under that framework, we're always looking for things people can do. You know, it's great to inform people, but if they can't do anything about it, the, you know, fun goes away pretty quick. That those action items and or those facts and the action item actually will give you something to do, and the rest of the show will be built around helping you do that. So, Dr. Enstrom, are you in there somewhere? Do we get you called back on the right line? We had to have a little phone fun this morning. It's never good unless we have a little phone fun.
Well, the problem with the other line was I would have had to pay for the call out of my own salary.
Oh, that's awesome. I did not know that. I'm going to make some calls when we get out of here.
All right. I kind of embellished that last part, but the point is we have a dedicated long-distance line where we don't pay for long-distance calls.
You said it, Bob. Everybody heard
it. I kind of embellished it. Carl, Bob wants to pay for the long-distance.
Carl very much likes us to make long-distance calls online, too.
There you go. There is a method to the madness. So in 1965, Dr. Enstrom graduated at in Claremont, California. That's really a pretty place, with a bachelor's degree in physics. Not a lot of us I took physics, but not a lot of us actually chose that as our field. And then he went on. Oh, somebody's phone's on. Release the hounds. Can you hear them?
This is too funny. Elizabeth is texting me.
Oh. All right, everybody, turn your phones off. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, Dr. Enstrom's real focus is in public health. And I guess you were featured on Rush Limbaugh this week. Elizabeth sent me a text about that. Were you aware of that, Dr. Enstrom?
Yes. Yes, it's on a different aspect of my research.
Totally different track, but interesting nonetheless. Secondhand smoke, huh?
Yes. Okay. Would you like me to begin?
Yes, sure. Fire away. We'll forget that part.
All right. I appreciate the opportunity to speak, and this, I think, is a real chance to get more people involved in an effort to correct what I consider to be a very inappropriate and onerous regulation that comes from the California Air Resources Board. And so I'd like to go through, there's a lot of material here, and with Aaron's help, I tried to break it down into a sort of a digestible chronology. And if we can understand this, I think it will allow for more people to be prepared to oppose what's been done. And so I refer people to the facts at the bottom of the web page. This whole process for the CARB diesel regulations actually began 20 years ago when a small group of scientists at the American Cancer Society and at a couple other locations, the primary driving locations are Harvard School of Public Health and Brigham Young University. There's a professor at Brigham Young University named Arden Pope, who's worked with a scientist at Harvard named Douglas Dockery, and they decided to examine a relationship between a form of air pollution known as fine particulate matter and mortality. And the major source of the data that's been used for this relationship comes from the American Cancer Society, what is known as their Cancer Prevention Study 2, which was started in 1982 and involves over a million Americans and over 100,000 Californians. And they found a very weak positive relationship between this form of air pollution by using monitoring data that comes from primarily from the Environmental Protection Agency. This data doesn't come from actual measurements on the people themselves, but generally they're measurements from a monitoring station that is posted somewhere in a county or city. And this relationship, which shows that as you raise the level of fine particulate air pollution, you increase the mortality rate slightly. And these are very small changes. And since the first major publication in 1993, 20 years ago, it's been challenged by other epidemiologists like myself, because this is not the kind of strength of epidemiologic relationships one normally associates with a solid finding. But in any case, because of the way these papers were published in prominent journals and had backing of other scientists, the evidence was then primarily from a paper in 1993 and a paper in 1995, was then used by EPA to make claims that fine particulate air pollution causes premature deaths. And this led to the establishment of what is known as the National Ambient Air Quality Standards for fine particulate air pollution.
Mm.
And these were established in 1997. This is the first time that EPA had developed this particular standard. And it has been controversial, as I said, ever since these papers came out. This finding was immediately challenged, and there was a Supreme Court case that was decided in 2001. And it went in favor of EPA, basically because, as with most of the legal cases regarding EPA and CARB, they're decided on process. So if the judge feels that the process has been followed, they tend to side with the regulatory agency.
What about the science part?
It's very difficult for judges and
just
the court system to interpret science. That's where it's important to get to the heart of this scientific validity of what's been done here. And that's very difficult for the listeners on the radio to understand with no expertise. My scientific expertise as a scientist goes back 43 years, and I know all the key players. My career was started with the help from the American Cancer Society, so I very reluctantly have gotten into criticizing them because they've gotten way off track on this issue. So that was basically the first fact that I wanted people to be aware of, on how these national standards are implemented, at least in this particular case, starting in 1997. The second fact that I want people to be aware of is that there are several sources for fine particulate air pollution in California. Major sources are forest fires and agricultural dust, and there are also industrial and residential sources, like burning wood in a fireplace and having industries that have combustion processes. Now, in recent years, we've also got another very interesting source, and that is pollution that blows across the Pacific Ocean from China, because China doesn't regulate the way the United States or California does. There are levels of particulate matter in China which in some days can be 50 times the levels here in California. And it's because of the movement of air, it actually comes back to California. But CARB is not really concerned about what comes from China. They only want to beat on the businessmen in California that operate diesel engines. So that is mainly trucks, buses, and construction equipment.
And is that just because they can't control the rest of it? You can't
that's
control...
That's right.
Okay.
And this is something that I think, again, is a process gone wry. Now, this CARB is able to do this because of, again, without going into too much detail, a law was passed in 1983 establishing a scientific review panel on toxic air contaminants. And this panel was used to make a decision in 1998 that diesel particulate matter is a toxic air contaminant. And that was done by a colleague of mine at UCLA named John Freund, who held a position on this panel for 30 years. He had a three-year term initially and was able to convert that into 10 three-year terms using very unethical and politically driven reappointment process that I'm not going to go into now. But it's because of a person like John Freund operating here in California that CARB was able to get the authority to develop these diesel regulations. In other words, they, again, CARB relied on scientists who, in my mind, were not objective and who were not fairly evaluating evidence and not even holding their positions properly on this panel. But they then got the authority, starting in 1998, to develop regulations to control diesel particulate matter in California. And that's where it's led to a series of regulations that impact many sectors, transportation, construction, agriculture. These have diesel engines are used throughout the California economy, and the people that bought these vehicles and equipment that operate by diesel engine did it all legally. This was all purchased with conformity to existing laws. So this is sort of an ex post facto change. In other words, they're being told that something they bought legally is no longer legal. But the justification for this is not really proper. So that's basically the second point, that a fact, is that we have a regulatory process used by CARB that really is not been done properly. It's used scientists who are not being fair and balanced in their interpretation of evidence and in their use of the procedures for allowing CARB to move forward. Now, the third fact involves evidence that's emerged. It's actually goes all the way back to 2000, but I became involved primarily 8 years ago. At the end of 2005, I published a major paper on the relationship between fine particulate air pollution and total mortality in California, and did not find any relationship at all. It was just exactly no effect. And this was out of alignment with the basic findings of the major scientists involved in this. As I mentioned, Professor Pope in Utah has been a leading person in this area now for 20 years, and has helped CARB in preparing their report on the number of premature deaths due to fine particulate air pollution in California. And this evidence, in my mind and in the minds of a number of other highly qualified scientists, and in terms of the evidence that has emerged since this report came out in 2008, is not justifying what CARB has done. In other words, the report in 2008, which was nominally written by a Dr. Ian Tran, who did not have a PhD that he claimed. This helped get us publicity. This is how we bring attention to this. It's very hard. This gets very abstract. But we got a lot of attention by uncovering the fact that Dr. Tran lied about his PhD. But the major problem with the CARB report from 2008 was that Professor Pope was the leading scientific advisor to CARB. And it's now obvious that his presentation of the evidence, as it existed in 2008, was not correct. And this is where I'm encouraging people to try to understand the evidence at least enough to realize the American Cancer Society's involvement, because the major evidence used by EPA and CARB has come from this American Cancer Society Cancer Prevention Study 2. And that's throughout the Tran report. If you look, you see this is the primary justifying evidence that's used. But when you now look at the way this evidence has emerged, it is very clear that even in that study, if you look in the state of California, there's no relationship. And this is by a paper that was, and a report, it's actually a report authored by a professor at UC Berkeley named Michael Jarrett, and a co-author is Professor Pope, and they did several different analyses, basically a different updated version of what I did in 2005 using a different database, and came to the same conclusion I did. There was no relationship.
Nice.
But they have not properly presented that their 2011 findings in a paper they published just in September 1st of this year. So they're continuing to misrepresent the findings right up to the current date, even though there are now at least 10 analyses of five major databases that show no relationship. And I'm not going to try to go into that evidence other than to say that it's very important for people to realize that EPA and CARB are not presenting the evidence properly. And because of this fact, there is now, as of August 1st of this year, a subpoena that was issued by the House Science Committee.
Okay, hold that thought, Dr. Enstrom. We've got to take a break here. Excuse me, but we do hope people hang with us. You know, sometimes the science part, if that's not your bag, is a little tough. But this is really important for people to understand, and Dr. Enstrom's taken a lot of time to try to condense it. So anyway, hang with us. We're talking about CARB this morning. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here at KCNR, 1460 AM.
No, we're here.
20. Okay, here, I'm back.
Hey, you're listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR 1460 AM. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. So we've got a lively chat room this morning. And if you have need to call in, phone number is 530-605-4567. Okay, so we've got, I'll just give you the rundown here, Dr. Enstrom. We've got about 16 minutes. We've got one more short break to fit in before the top of the hour. And see if we're on the same page here, since you're on the phone and we're here. And, you know, mind reading hasn't really been perfected yet. We want to look at the House subpoena And then I'm getting people in the chat room that are asking why cities and towns and things have not asked for EPA regulation to be changed since their data is faulty. And I would point out to them that the Bakersfield newspaper there, the Bakersfield...
Californian,
yeah, how easy was that?
I used to live there.
Oh, okay. Well, it's right there on the webpage, November 15th, 2013, the Bakersfield, Californian article, quote, air officials say, EPA, we want to keep our money, end quote. What a good idea. So for people who want to skip ahead, you can spy on that part. So, all right, walk us into the House subpoena thing, because subpoenas are fairly mysterious, and who knows what goes on in the House Science Committee.
Okay, fine. This basically occurred because there the growing frustration of the way EPA was using what is now sort of basically considered secret science data. That is, the data from the American Cancer Society has not been shared by American Cancer Society with other scientists like myself and numerous people over a long period of time. And the House Science Committee had not issued a subpoena in 21 years. So this is reflecting a growing frustration level of how difficult it is to essentially reassess controversial scientific evidence. And so this action was finally taken after more than 2 years of letters of correspondence between the House Science Committee and EPA, where EPA had actually promised to make some of this underlying data from the American Cancer Society available for independent analysis. But the American Cancer Society has refused to cooperate. It's not only refused to release data, it's also refused to cooperate in interpreting findings that have been published. And this could be done just by a simple cooperation process with the scientists there at ACS. So this subpoena was issued on August 1st, and it's a formal legal document. This is one of the items that I posted there. There's a summary of it. It's actually the first item, and it gives there's a description of the subpoena, and a key item in the subpoena itself is page 7, where they list four publications that are based on the ACS data. And again, this is too detailed to go into here, but the bottom line is that the subpoena has been defied by the American Cancer Society and Harvard. But the main source of the data is from the American Cancer Society. EPA has, I believe, made at least a fairly good faith effort to get the data from these two organizations because they don't possess it themselves, although they use it in their development of national air pollution standards. And so at this point there's an impasse, and as I understand the committee is headed by a congressman from Texas named Lamar Smith, and the vice chair is a congressman from California, Dana Rohrabacher, down in Southern California. And these people are very, very concerned about EPA's use of secret science data to develop national regulations, which have impacts not only here with the CARB diesel regulations, but this, in fact, impacts power plants and tremendous numbers of operations across the country. And there have been some estimates that the total integrated cost of all these regulations could go up to $1 trillion. And in any case, it is not right that science be done by a small group of investigators like Professor Pope and the key American Cancer Society scientist named Michael Toon, and then not be checkable, not be able to be confirmed by scientists like myself and other highly qualified scientists who have a different way of, a different, potentially different interpretation of this data. So what happens now is that there's a number of things that are in process. There have been lawsuits continually over the last 20 years, and those are in process now in California to try to stop the regulations, where there's a specific deadline coming up on January 1st, just literally 3 days from now, that will impact a lot of diesel truck owners. And I don't know that these lawsuits are going to doubtful they'll be resolved. There's another process that's just been developed by the city of Redding. Incredible work by a councilman, Gary Cadd. And this is a process that, again, should allow some mediation. And as I understand, it's not being taken that seriously by CAR, but I guess there is some action being done, and it needs to be used, because it's a process that was set up as part of the National Environmental Protection Act back in 1970 when EPA was created. So that process needs to be fully flushed out. With regard to a couple of the other, and that's cited in Gary Cadd's letter, is the third item that is listed as a reference on the web page. The second item is very important, because this is an email letter that I sent on November 7th to a epidemiologist at the American Cancer Society named Alpa Patel, who is key to this, because she's in charge of the new Cancer Prevention Study 3 that's just started this year, and it's enrolling subjects this year, and she's very familiar with CPS-2 as well. And one of my contentions is that the CPS-2 data was never supposed to be used for this type of research. It really doesn't have any connection with cancer. It's the notion of premature deaths, well, that is an increase in the total death rate, that drives the concern about fine particulate air pollution. And to the extent that the death rate is increased, it's increased because of cardiovascular diseases, not because of an increase in cancer. So why the American Cancer Society is involved with an issue that has nothing to do with cancer and is used by EPA for multi-billion dollar regulations that many of us consider are unjustified is hard to understand. And I wrote to Dr. Patel to try to get an explanation of how their data was used, because the latest study that was published by the American Cancer Society group, and the lead author was Michael Jarrett, but Professor Pope was a key author, and so was Dr. Toon of the American Cancer Society, they allowed home address information to be given to this select group of investigators when there was an agreement back in 1982 that this home address information would be kept confidential and not shared with anyone. So I was trying to clarify this to understand why they would allow home address information to be given out when they had originally promised not to give this information out. And I haven't gotten a response at all. It's totally unprofessional. And these are very serious issues that need to be addressed. And they're not being addressed by the American Cancer Society. And so that brings up what I think are the potential action items here. And what I would like people to do is to try to understand, digest what you can of what's presented on the web page here. And you don't even need to understand it in detail to go into the local ACS office. They're throughout California. I know there's one in Redding. They're probably one in each county, at least in Northern California. And you just simply ask them, why are they defying the House Science Committee subpoena on regulations that have a direct impact on businesses right here in California that involve diesel vehicles? And you don't have to do more than that. The people in the local office probably don't have a clue as to what's going on, because much of this is driven by the National Home Office in Atlanta, Georgia, and they only use their local offices to collect donations. But it's very important that they then check with the home office and find out what's going on, because they need to get back to you. If you actually go there, they need to give you an answer that explains this. Why are they dealing with a non-cancer issue that's used by EPA for onerous multi-billion dollar regulations? And why can't they comply with a legitimate subpoena from the House of Representatives? Is this not something they really are capable of doing? And because if they're not capable of doing it, then what's going to happen, according to my understanding, is the House Science Committee is going to propose to Congress that they no longer allow this type of data and these kind of publications to be used for regulatory purposes. It's just too important an issue. When you have the livelihoods of people being determined by secret science, this is wrong. This is not the way science is supposed to be done. And so one of the most important developments now in the last couple of months is the Air Pollution Control District in the San Joaquin Valley has had it. And this is the article that's November 15th in the Bakersfield Californian. Because what they've realized is that it's impossible to comply with the EPA regulations. They would basically have to shut down the entire San Joaquin Valley to achieve the air pollution levels for ozone and particulate matter that are required by EPA. And they believe that they have actually complied to the extent necessary to get removal of this. They've had to put in a special tax on vehicles to pay for a number of these things. They want this tax stopped. And it's important to now take advantage of the fact that you have a unanimous vote by this air pollution control district that they're concerned also about the EPA regulations. And the interesting thing that I discovered in all this is when you go back to a major report in 2000 and you look at the mortality risk associated with fine particulate air pollution, it turned out that the Fresno area had the second lowest mortality risk in the entire United States. And this fact has never been recognized by EPA, even though it's in a document that they use. They don't recognize geographic variation. And this is my major contention, that the effects that they're basing their regulation on are mainly coming from the Rust Belt back east in the area of Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Kentucky, that area. And they don't exist at all in California. In fact, California is at the low end of risk. And yet this is not being properly recognized by EPA or by the scientists that are using the American Cancer Society data. And so it's a total misrepresentation of scientific evidence. And that's why I feel it's so important that listeners here just simply go to the American Cancer Society office that's near them and ask for a clarification of this and see if you get an answer. And if you don't get an answer, I'd like you to get back to me or Aaron and others that are involved with the various efforts to combat the CARB diesel regulations, because this is wrong. There are no premature deaths here in California, and it's a misuse of science. And it's very important that more and more people, especially if you know family members that are impacted by these CARB diesel regulations, that you just simply help out. I mean, do it for the greater good. We can really we can fix California and remove a lot of these unnecessary regulations if enough people will stand up and help.
They do have to stand up and help. And we're hearing the going to news music is happening. We're going to be on the second hour with Dr. Enstrom and three other scientists here, so you're going to learn a lot more about CARB. Stay online with us here at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Join us in the chat.
KCNR, Shasta Redding.
Was that hurry up and start?
That was what I didn't get in before the top of the hour.
Oh, yeah. We got
Sidetracked there. Didn't get all the details.
Jammed up on time.
It's called a legal station identification.
Oh, I had no idea. I was wandering into that territory. Okay.
It has to be the call letters followed by the city of license, and you're required to do that once an hour.
Really?
Yeah. KCNR Shasta, which Shasta is actually our city of license.
Oh.
But then we can add our neighboring town, so it's KCNR Shasta Redding.
I did not know that.
I'm learning so much today, my head is swelling.
I've said that before, I just didn't know why. So it's not like science, you can't just be flexible with it, huh?
Oh, no. You can be flexible with it.
You actually have to do that. God. So
I detect some sarcasm.
Yeah, there was a lot of sarcasm.
It's like math. You don't have to have the right answer.
No, you just...
You have to have the group answer.
Well, you don't, anymore with Common Core, I don't think you even have to have the group answer. I think you have to show how you think you got the answer, even if the answer is wrong.
No, you have to feel good about your answer.
Oh, God, I knew that was coming. Bill.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Bill's a very fast learner.
He is, too, huh?
Picking this stuff up, yeah.
Kind of got the Weisenheimer thing going on there. Yeah, somebody asked us the other day if we were newlyweds. It's like 20 years ago.
Why do we sound like it?
They're like, oh, you guys seem to have so much fun. Like, you too can have fun. It's all about the choices you make, huh? Or doing things over and over again until you get them right. So, you are listening to We the People Radio with more information than you probably wanted. We are here in Reading, but we broadcast all over the place on the internet. And we hope that you will join us online. WeThePeopleRadio.us has tons of information. If you missed the first hour of the show, you're going to have to go back and review some of the things online or listen to the first hour. A couple hours after the show finishes, the Listen Live button on the website there becomes the archive. So you can send that to people all over the place. And for those folks that think that it isn't coming to a state near them, other people around the country, this is coming to a state near you. And the American Cancer Society is a big component of this, and that is in every single town. The way you affect those people, I mean, anyone who was paying attention saw what happened with Duck Dynasty over the Christmas vacation, right? And so, you know, here he's suspended, they're out, they're gone. What? Oh, we're going to lose millions of dollars and billions of dollars in merchandise. Okay, yeah. He's back on.
Well, A&E, I think they realized that was...
Yeah, they were shooting themselves in the back.
Yeah, irresponsible move.
But did you notice they quietly announced it on Friday afternoon to keep it out of the news cycle as much as possible?
Sure, then Cracker Barrel. My point in bringing that up is that with these CARB regulations, most people don't have the scientific background to go to a hearing and weigh in on the scientific ins and outs of all this. But you can weigh in to the American Cancer Society, because the last thing they want is for all of their donors to withdraw support. And what better reason than the fact that they're helping to destroy our economy by providing well, at this point, faulty science to CARB.
It always comes back to the funding.
And not answering the subpoena that the House Science Committee has put forward. So all that information, we kind of did that in the first hour. We're not going to do that again. But you can find that all online. And there is a great, Robert put together a terrific page today. So you have five facts and an action item that supports all of that. And then all the backup information you could ever want in the universe is there. So you don't have to just take our word for it. You can go do your own homework. Feel free. And Dr. Enstrom's always available to educate. I got a quick, got some quick science lesson yesterday. That was never really my my topic, but together we worked through it. Thanks for the tutorial, Dr. Enstrom, by the way. Oh, good. He's
still here.
All right. You're awfully quiet. And I know that we want to bring on some other guys, so I'm just going to count on you to say, hey, call so-and-so. I've got the numbers written on a Post-it note, and we'll do that at your beckoning.
Yes. I would very much like you now to call Professor Robert Phelan from UC Irvine. He's been involved with Mary Nichols and CARB for 40 years, and he would like to speak on this issue.
Poor guy. Anybody who's had to deal with those guys for 40 years, all of you, I just feel sorry for all of you. You used to produce quality science, and quality science actually counted. And, you know, and then if there was an error, someone would step up and say, no, here I have this data, it doesn't match your stuff. Everybody would go back to the drawing board. And that's just kind of gone now, isn't it?
In many ways it is. And to tell you how much CARB has changed, it was first headed by a professor of aerosol chemistry from Caltech who had actual knowledge of air pollution health effects. Mary Nichols is an activist environmental lawyer who doesn't care about science. She's interested in regulating. And you can see what kind of regulation she wants imposed on California just by these diesel regulations.
Okay, we have Dr. Robert Phelan. He is with UC Irvine. He is a professor of medicine and co-director of UC Irvine Air Pollution and Health Effects Laboratory and an expert in the toxicology of particulate matter. And that's exactly what we're doing. So you fellas take it away.
Hi, good day, Aaron.
Hi, good morning.
It's a pleasure to be here. I didn't monitor the previous hour of your show, so I'd like to say my contribution is I've studied particulate air pollution since the 1970s, and when regulators actually were panicked in California over some of the intended regulations that would harm our state, they asked me what should be done, and I said, let's have a conference. An international conference on the health effects of particulate material. And since then, I've organized and directed four such conferences. And truthfully, the bottom line is that California's particulate air pollution is very different than a few cities back east. And I would say the toxicity is negligible. And specifically, with respect to diesel exhaust, the diesel engines nowadays are so clean that I calculated at the maximum that we have of diesel soot in the air, the average dose for a Californian of diesel soot over 70 years, breathing 24 hours a day, would be 0.03 grams. Now, that's a little less than smoking a single cigarette, and that's the current 70-year dose. So as a toxicologist and as a person who studied this, we're well below anything that could possibly have a health effect. And if you took that entire 70-year dose at one time, and if it was strychnine, the most toxic chemical I'm familiar with, you would be about a fourth of a lethal dose. That would be taking the entire 70 years at once. So the diesel soot is not a problem in California. And I'm not in favor of regulations. The current ones are too strict because of their impact on jobs, on the cost of goods and services, on the economy in general.
Good.
So that's my sort of introductory comment, Aaron.
That's mind-blowing.
To me, too, Aaron. I've criticized the regulators so much that I was actually appointed to a top EPA advisory committee, and then the administrator in EPA, one of the subordinate administrators that appointed me, retired. And I think it was a shock to the committee to get this view from one of their advisory committee members.
Gosh. Well, over a 70-year period, it's less than...
less than a gram, for sure.
Wow. Mm. And I would venture to guess that 100% of the people listening right now didn't know that.
And not too many people are going to tell you that.
Well, there's, you know, that too.
To get for the people listening, just those that are even slightly mathematically inclined, the standard is 10 micrograms. That's millionth of a gram in a cubic meter. So if you multiply that by, if you breathe a million cubic meters, you would get 10 grams, a million cubic meters. If the PM 2.5 was 100% diesel soot, which it's not, to breathe a million cubic meters and get those 10 grams would take over 100 years. And that's nothing, you know. I mean, you go out and you turn your compost pile over in your garden on a dry day, you're going to get a much higher dose. Well, not than 10 grams, but you'll be getting, you know, in the gram sort of realm of dose. So our lungs just, you know, are tough. And the doses from diesel are so small that they're just completely negligible. And that's because, you know, the engines have been cleaned up. The technology has advanced. And diesel soot just, it almost isn't there.
That's crazy.
It is. But that doesn't seem to... dissuade, you know, the vested interests that we have in regulating. You know, they've really cleaned up the air over the past 40 years, and I'd like to see them all given certificates of achievement, but then stop.
Yeah, but then stop. Yeah, you've done enough.
Stop. Yeah, you've won the war, you know. It's sort of like World War II, you know, you've defeated the enemy, yeah. And now let's go home and build a strong economy. Let's build a better life for people rather than try to perpetuate the bureaucracy, really.
Wow. So all these, you know, they want to get rid of all the wood stoves and all that because our air quality is terrible. And
oh, yeah.
That's all really just crap. Oh, that's awesome.
It is from a toxicology point of view, for sure. Now, there are people, individuals, that are extremely sensitive. For example, there are asthmatics that a single pollen grain inhaled and deposited in the right place could actually trigger an attack because you can have this cascade.
Yeah, that would be me. I would be an excellent test subject for that.
If someone is smoking a cigar in a room, stay out. You know?
Yeah.
There are people that have had laryngeal cancer who have a hard time swallowing food, and so if they were to take a bite of solid food, they might choke to death. So please don't eat the solid food. So we have a very small segment of the population that might be affected by, would be affected by wood fires and so on. But you can't ban it all. For those people who just have to stay away.
Sure,
and
there's
the solid
there's
food
no...
analogy is, you can't ban solid food because one in 700 people might choke to death.
Sure, and there's no
and the economy
basis for that.
An extremely important health factor.
Right.
You know, you can destroy the health, especially children. They're vulnerable to the price of food and so on.
Unbelievable.
We have tens of thousands of kids going to bed hungry, and even here in Orange County in California, every night.
Yeah, which is just ridiculous.
Like Obamacare.
And so let's be sure and give all our money to the regulators, crush more jobs so more people can do without. We'll be right back with you, though, Doctor. Hang on 5 seconds. And, okay, I'm lying. That's the measurement unit of measurement I give my dogs. I'll be right back with you in 5 seconds. we're going to be right back with the humans in 2 minutes. You're listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR 1460 AM.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
That's the one thing we're not going to get.
No, we have the air that we breathe, and we don't love carbs. So it's kind of like the opposite song, but hey, it works. Good one, Bob. All right, you're joining Aaron, Bob, and Bill here at We the People Radio. It's Sunday morning, 8 to 10 every week. We hope you'll shoot this archive to your friends and family so they can become educated, because it's going to take all of us to push back on this. Obviously, there are people who've spent their entire lives producing quality science, and they are not being listened to. But it's much easier for thousands of people in the state of California to rise up than it is for a handful of scientists to try to get through the door, apparently.
Well, I think once the cost of goods goes through the roof because of shipping costs, people will put it together and rise up and stop this madness. It's just crazy.
They're going to have to hurry it up.
I mean, every truck that ships from out of state is going to have to transfer their load at California borders because out-of-state truckers aren't going to comply to CARB regulations.
Bob, may I make a quick comment on that?
Fire away.
The problem is that these regulations are already putting many, many truckers, especially small ones, completely out of business.
Yes.
And so they can't rise again. You know, I talked with one woman who's a third-generation owner of 3 trucks. And, you know, her father and her grandfather supported the family on that, and she did too. She's probably out of business today. And so what will happen is mega trucking companies will take over, and you'll have more or less a monopoly. But you'll be putting thousands of small businesses completely out of business, and they can't afford to buy back in.
No, you're right. So
I think the response, you know, has to be a little sooner than when nobody can afford milk for their kids, truthfully.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when there's no competition, you know,
yes,
you're right.
Exactly.
That's going to be a huge problem.
Yeah. The big companies, you know, they can put an extra $40,000-$50,000 into each of their trucks, but the mom-and-pop businesses, which I understand is, I think, currently the majority of the trucking that goes on in California, they just can't handle it.
No, they,
you know, they'll be gone.
No, they're small private private truckers.
Well, and this hasn't come for the, this hasn't necessarily come for, like, the timber industry and that sort of thing yet. It's not hitting everybody all at the same time.
Yeah, there's a saying that one of the women who was in charge of air and radiation for EPA, and I know her, she used the concept of divide and conquer. And that sure is the way to do it, isn't it?
Yikes.
You blame the truckers, you know, they're the ones destroying our kids' health, and you get rid of them, and then what's next, you know?
Well, people are going to have to realize that even these big mega truck companies, they're going to make the investment. They're going to, you know, they're going to upgrade their trucks. But who's going to pay for that ultimately? And that's going to be you and me.
Absolutely.
And it's not going to be, you know, 89-cent lettuce anymore. It's going to be, you know, $2.89 lettuce, and everybody's going to be mad. But, you know, where's the breaking point?
And there are a lot of people that, you know, their salaries are high enough, they don't care. You know, the lettuce $3 a head, but there are a lot of people that means there's not going to be lettuce on the table.
No, but then I think that's most people.
Yeah, I agree with you, and that the so-called income gap is widening, which is a real shame.
Sure, and people are looking at all sorts of things, but this isn't one of them. So what do you see happening in your field from your point of view? Where do you go next?
Well, What I've done personally is I feel that we know enough about the toxicology of California air pollution, and Californians, and I want to thank you all, have supported my salary since the 70s when I initiated the was the first director of the Air Pollution Health Effects Lab. But I've focused much more on teaching and training, and I train students, and the majority of the students I train today are physicians who are retraining themselves in occupational and environmental medicine. I've got two superb Navy physicians, a commander and a lieutenant, a lieutenant and a lieutenant commander that I'm training. I also present papers at conferences, and I participate in governance at the university. But I think the thing that I'm most interested in is preparing textbooks, because if you influence even a few influential leaders of the future with what the truth is, basically, it can make a difference. But I'm not, I've dropped out of the, I will call it a rat race, and I hadn't thought of it, but it's literally that, you know, exposing rodents to high concentrations of pollutants and measuring subtle changes in the rodents, and then publishing papers, and then that's used as a basis often for over-regulation.
So you really are in the rat race.
Yes, exactly. It's literally, you know, a rat race. And I remember one agency, I won't name them, because truthfully it's no fun saying these things because, you know, there are repercussions. But one agency didn't like the results that we got, negative results. And being frustrated by that, I said, what do you want from us as scientists? And the answer was to get in the newspapers. So I think we're looking at something that's akin to a racket, really, where there's management of what people perceive, what people believe. And you certainly have the same thing, I think, with some of the climate scares they're going around.
Sure.
Oh my Not gosh. Going around. They're dominating, you know, people's view worldwide.
Right, and it's dictating policy, which is exactly upside down. And the folks like you guys that are providing data are completely being, actually, you're not just being disregarded; you're being drowned out.
Yes, no, I agree. I remember when I the first international conference I had on particulate material, I invited I would say honest epidemiologist, people like Dr. Instrom, which, in my opinion, he is the best environmental epidemiologist in the state of California. He's the best trained, he's the most honest, in my opinion. But, you know, I invited those people like that, and they presented papers at my conference, along with 100 other attendees. And I published the results, and someone from a national regulatory agency said, you know, it only takes one person on a evaluation study session to make one negative comment, and your next grant's not going to be funded. You know, it's that competitive. So the scientists that will go along with the program are well-funded, actually. You know, Eisenhower warned us about the military-industrial complex. And I think there's a similar one in science. To have a regulatory agency that has a vested interest, really, supplying the funding for the research is not a good situation, really.
No.
So, you know, there are scientists that are quite willing to publish positive results to use high levels of exposure for rodents in the human studies to manipulate the data sets and keep searching through the data sets till they can find something that has a positive association, and an association is not necessarily a cause. And those people are rewarded, truthfully, with funding.
Wow. And that's exactly the way it's not supposed to be.
It is not supposed to be that way. Now, I mean, that's human nature. It's that way in a lot of arenas, but it's certainly not supposed to be that way in science. Of all areas, science should be the one that we trust in, to be objective and to give us valuable information that, that we need, not to be a tool for agencies or individuals.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, we thank you for your input, and I'm not sure, Dr. Enstrom, are we now signing off with Dr. Phelan?
I think because of the time, it would be best now to go to Dr. Stan Young.
All right. Well,
yeah. I want to thank you all very much, Aaron and Bob, is it?
Aaron and Bill and Bob.
Oh, Bill and Bob and
yeah.
Aaron. I just want to thank you so much
here.
Because I owe this to the people of California that have supported me for about 40 years now, and I want to say thank you.
Well thank you. Yeah, definitely thank you for coming on this morning.
Thanks, Dr.
Okay,
Phelan.
Signing off.
Okay, and so on the break here, we'll be calling Dr. Young. Dr. Young is the Assistant Director for Bioinformatics. I don't even know what that is. He's going to tell us about that, though. The National Institute of Statistical Sciences, research in Triangle Park, North Carolina, and an expert in the statistics of air pollution health effects. So anybody who thinks this is just Dr. Enstrom's the only guy who figured it out, and, you know, he's the lone... the lone person dissenting, absolutely not the case. So we'll call Dr. Young. We'll thank our advertisers. We'll be right back with you in 2 minutes here at We the People Radio on KCNR 1460 AM.
Welcome back to We the People Radio, KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, and Dr. Enstrom, we have another guest. I'd like you to maybe give a little bio and introduce, if you could.
Yes, Dr. Young has been involved with statistical research for many years, going back over 30 years, and I'm just going to let him also describe his background. I wanted people to realize it was because of a letter that he wrote to Governor Schwarzenegger in July of 2008 that both he and I were able to uncover the phony PhD of Dr. Tran. And it's important because it gave visibility to us. The efforts to suppress the dissenters like myself and Dr. Phelan, Dr. Young, and Dr. Malcolm, who's coming up next, are great. And so when we get a breakthrough like Dr. Tran, it's important because it does increase the visibility of the criticism of CARB. So I'd like Dr. Young to finish the background on himself.
He's being dialed. He didn't pick up, so we're re-dialing him. So it's kind of nice you're giving us the skinny on that. So he works in statistics of air pollution, and you deal with the health effects. And so were you guys talking, or did you email each other, or it was like, hey, what's up with this Tran guy?
The power of the internet.
Okay.
Because starting literally 8 years ago, at the beginning of 2006, there was a physician in Texas named Dr. John Dunn, who's both a MD and a JD. We began communicating with each other, the three of us, over the internet about problems with EPA regulations. And we actually were able to testify over the phone or in person. Stan actually lives close to an EPA office there in North Carolina. They have one of their major offices there in North Carolina. And so we've made our attempts over the years as sort of isolated scientists and basically gotten ignored. And so we've gradually grown in terms of connecting with other scientists and having more input. Both Dr. Young and I were mentioned as when the House Science Committee came out as legitimate scientists who deserve the opportunity to reanalyze the American Cancer Society data. And so it's very important that that this process move forward.
Yeah.
Has he been reached now?
No. We're moving on. We've left him a message. Well,
maybe
so.
You could give us a little bit of background on Dr.
Do you
Chan.
Do you have the phone numbers that he,
I do.
You tried both of them?
Because
I just spoke with him a few minutes ago and told him that he would be called.
Okay, I have your phone numbers. I'm going to relook in my email for a different one. But while we're doing that, we have Dr. Malkin on there. And he's a professor of physics and astronomy, and these guys have been working together. He and Dr. Enstrom have been working together on various critiques of the CARB diesel regulation, particularly the adverse socioeconomic impact. Now, there's a study for you.
Yeah, can I comment on that, Aaron?
Yeah, why don't you jump in on this, Dr. Malkin, and we're gonna circle back on Dr. Young. We're gonna do it the Western way. We're gonna go rustle him up while you guys are chatting.
All right. Well, you've been talking about a number of very subtle possible health effects, for example, of particulate matter that are so small they may be too small to even measure, but now you just mentioned something which is a very important effect on people's health, which is their employment and their income. Now, that's not really controversial at all, because these are huge effects. I'm not an expert on this, but it's pretty easy to look through the literature on what these effects are. So I did some research on it, and as I was saying, the effect of losing your job is enormous on the chances of your future mortality. Your health generally goes down when you're unemployed. The longer you stay unemployed, the worse off it is. When your income goes down a lot, you get the same kind of effects, fairly dramatic also. So these are huge effects, for example, compared with the exposure levels of fine particles that the regulators like CARB are worrying about, or EPA is worrying about. So the problem is when they look at the effects of their regulations, they don't account for these huge effects on the economics of people in California or anywhere else. They leave those out, and those turn out to be at least as negative as the effects that they claim, the health effects that are positive, that they think they're going to be giving us with these very rough regulations. For example, I mean, I was looking at the numbers that the Air Resources Board itself predicts. So these are their own, of course, they're always very optimistic about how much health benefit there's going to be. It may be zero. But anyway, let's just take their numbers at face value. They estimated, for example, with these new particle regulations, practically shutting down the trucking industry, the construction industry, and so on, that they might save 200 what they call premature deaths annually. Well, it turns out, according to their own estimates, that the reduced incomes of people in California, particularly people working in these industries, and the increased unemployment in these industries are predicted, just using, you know, the research that has been done on economic effects on your health, will reduce, result in more than 200 premature deaths. So they're not even actually, they're actually harming more people than they're helping by their own measures, which I question very much anyway. So that was the main point I wanted to make. Even if you accept their very, very questionable health gains, they've left out the economic health bad consequences that are going to lead to more premature deaths than the ones that they even claim they're going to save.
Oh my gosh. You can, you know, honestly, if you're going to make up, if you're going to do a movie on, and just with like a crazy theme and you were going to make it really spoofy, this would be great.
Well, nobody could believe that anything like this.
Everybody
really
would say, well, that'll never happen.
Yeah, you're right. It is spooky because they found, of course, it took years for them to, the regulators to find this, but they found a way. Of course, it goes far beyond the trucking industry and far beyond construction industry and so on. They found a way to basically give themselves power over essentially everything that everybody does by coming up with these health rationale schemes on, you know, quote, pollutants like fine particles, which they've never even defined what it is, which there's no human activity that produces anything that couldn't actually be controlled or shut down by them. So that is almost magic, isn't it? A magic power that the scientists basically put in the hands of the regulators. Of course, they were paid very well for it. And it is very scary. I mean, you couldn't hardly dream up a more scary scenario where an evil force came into the country and decided that it could make people do or not do anything that they said. But that's exactly what we're looking at.
Good grief.
Well, that's exactly how it happens in these little banana republics, too.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Outsiders come in and take over the government while everybody's asleep.
Jeez.
Right, but they don't have to, in the banana republics, which I hope we're not degenerating into, they don't have to go through any rationales. Well, it's hoping the people, commandante, or whatever. No, I'm just doing it because I'm the commandante.
Yeah.
Here, of course, we have an elaborate mechanism that has all the trappings of a democracy. It has the trappings of a government by the people, but, of course, it's not. That's even more perverse about it. I like a dictator just comes in and says, no, I'm just going to do it, you know. I'm running North Korea. I'm just going to shoot all these people, take all their money, and send it to my palace.
You can't say shoot on the radio.
Send it to my palace.
Course,
I like
you
that.
You have to put up a big facade to convince people you're not doing that. But the facade is wearing very thin.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Dr. Enstrom, your call. We've found Dr. Young. I feel like I'm in...
We have found Dr. Young, however, we don't have a free line for him at the moment, so he is standing by for me to call him back.
You've got to hear from Dr. Young. So,
okay.
Yeah, we want to hear about this Tran guy.
Okay, so we are... the chaos continues. All right, so Dr. Matthew Malkin, we're going to say bye to you, and we're going to call Dr. Young really quick, take our fast final break, and finish up top of the hour with Dr. Stanley Young. Robert will be posting his PowerPoint on the website here shortly, but I'm not sure it'll be up in time for his talk. We'll be right back with you in 2 minutes here at We the People Radio. You're listening to us at KCNR 1460 AM.
Shasta ready.
Unbelievable. I was just telling them on the break there, I feel like I'm in one of those Leslie Nielsen movies. The song is although not a song from a Leslie Nielsen movie. You know, it's like, doctor. Okay, we need to let this doctor go. We got to call the doctor. Doctor Victor. Exactly.
Well, now we get to hear about the infamous Dr. Tran,
who I can't believe is still around.
Yes, but we're not hearing from him. We're hearing from Dr. Stanley Young. Yes. All right, Dr. Young, fire away at will.
Okay. I have been working with Jim Enstrom for a number of years, and one of the things we discovered jointly was that Dr. Tran was not really a doctor. He'd purchased his PhD, so he's and he lied about it, and Gary Nichols protected him until a crucial vote was held on the diesel thing, and then they put him on administrative leave for a little bit, but then they brought him back. I think he basically knows too much about what's going on in industry. He would have been fired outright, and so would Mary Nichols, given what she did. He's not a... I did exchange some emails earlier and ask him in particular for a data set, and he said, well, at CARB, they never got the data sets.
What does that mean?
Reading what was in the papers. I got the same explanation from the EPA. EPA and CARB, well, back up a bit. One of the hallmarks of science is that claims should be replicated, and a simple way to do that is to provide the data set that you use to someone else so that they can duplicate what you came up with.
Mm.
As a matter of administrative procedures, both CARB and the EPA on purpose don't receive the data sets so that they then won't have to give them up. And the people that they hire to do research, they won't. That's either in general, and so you end up with what I call trust me science, which is really not science at all. So that's all tied in with Tran and just the way they do their business. We did because we couldn't get data sets from the EPA and CARB. A friend of mine and I, we downloaded air pollution data from CARB, and then we got mortality data, death certificate data, the eight largest air districts in California. I've subjected all of that to analysis, and I can't find any effect of air pollution on acute deaths. If you look on the day that the air pollution goes up, or if you look at a day or two later, there's no effect on deaths. And then California has an interesting situation. They have wildfires there. I'm not in California, so I don't experience this. The wildfires send PM2.5, a measure of air pollution, rocketing upward. And I looked at various air regions and looked for the increase in air pollution, which I could detect very easily from the data. And then I looked at the deaths on the day that the air pollution went up, or a couple of days after that. And with air pollution going up dramatically, there was essentially no effect on deaths. So there is no acute effect of air pollution on deaths, which is one of the claims that CARB and the EPA make. And then Jim Enstrom and a number of other researchers have looked at long-term chronic effects on death, and they see no effects either. And so it's a big problem. The reason that the death thing is crucial is that all of the regulations are based on CARB and the EPA saying we're saving lives. Well, they're not saving any lives acutely, and they're not saving any lives chronically. So it looks like, just a big big scam. One way to describe it.
Yeah, I was going to say a big feel good, but that's
the
actually
only way to describe it.
Yeah, it only feels good because we really don't have the levels of air pollution they say. But other than that, it doesn't feel good on our wallets.
Well, the levels of air pollution go up dramatically in wildfires, and the smoke from the wildfires. I've got satellite pictures. You can get them off the web, and you can see huge plumes of smoke, and you can actually see the fires themselves going across the Los Angeles basin. And then the increase in air pollution can be tracked using the CARB data. The air pollution goes up pretty dramatically, but then using the death certificate data, if there were any truth to the claim that air pollution will cause acute deaths, we should see an increase in deaths in the Los Angeles basin, and we do not. So it's and then California is special in a sense. Way back in 2000,
say that.
It was noted that there were no air pollution effects on deaths in California. And that's been papered over by the CARB and the EPA-funded researchers. They want to use national data for California. And in the year 2000, they knew very well that there were no deaths in California. So they've just been, one way to lie is to just keep quiet. And so they've kept quiet about what's going on in California. Jim Enstrom in 2005 published a paper on California, and saw no deaths due to chronic exposure to air pollution, and others have confirmed his findings. In fact, under a lot of pressure, the CARB researchers admitted that they saw no deaths in California. So, however you think about the rest of the country, California is either a special case and shouldn't be under all this pressure on air pollution, or it may be that the air quality has improved over the last 10, 20 years, and there are no deaths anymore.
Hey, I just did that. That's weird. Were you channeling me? Shut my microphone off, and I was gagging on my side.
There was no question back in 1952. There was heavy, heavy, heavy air pollution in London, and people have gone over the data pretty carefully, and there was an increase in deaths while that was going on. There's nothing in the United States that even remotely approaches what was going on in London in 52. And, they're just, I'm willing to give my data set to people, let them take a look at it, too.
Outstanding. Well, guys, you know what? We're going to have to do another show on this because there's way too much information in here. And even with the... you guys doing the bulk of the explaining, there's a lot here. The good news is we put together a really good web page this morning. Robert has also added down in the facts and action items section for people who are looking for what to do. Got a little project for you to go after the American Cancer Society to get these guys the data so that they can prove the science is wrong. You can print that fact and action chart. He's got a print feature hooked up, so it's super easy. We will be in contact with Dr. Enstrom and Drs. Malkin, Young, and Phelan, and we thank them all for their participation this morning, and for everybody to jump up and do a little something about CARB. This is crazy, and it's going to affect everybody. Thank you very much, Doctor, and Doctor, huh?
Thanks for joining us.
I think we covered everybody.
Bye.
Thanks, guys. We'll do this again real soon. Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Bill.
This is KCNR, Shasta Redding.